everyone, and welcome to Let's Jaws for a Minute, the podcast that took a deep dive into Steven Spielberg's 1975 masterpiece and is now setting sail into uncharted waters to discover the world beyond Jaws. I'm Sarah Buddery.
And I'm MJ Smith. And this week we had to call an audible, but we kept our guest. And we're joined by returning guest Nick Meir. Nick, welcome back to the show, man.
Yes, hey, thank you guys for having me on.
Yep. Nick went above and beyond and watched both the films that we were... We originally were going to record this episode about the film Shark Night, but Shark Night is not available to stream, even to rent, in the UK. So
nowhere.
Yeah.
Which is a shame.
Seems like it. I believe you.
Yeah, because... like I was telling you guys before, literally 20 minutes after finishing it, Sarah's like, by the way, hope you didn't watch it yet.
Yeah, we did call an audible. This episode, we will be talking about Open Water, which is a film that probably should have been in this season anyway.
Yeah.
But before we get to Open Water, we have a returning guest question, which is, Nick, is there an animal that you know you should not try to hug that you really would like to hug?
Yes, so I thought long and hard about this one, and I think I would love to hug a bear, I shouldn't, but like they're so fat and they just look so cuddly that I know if maybe it thought I was like its child, it would be nice to me, but that also it could kill me in a matter of seconds. So
yeah. What do you specific type of bear or
I think like a big grizzly bear, like the bear in Cocaine Bear, but like even fatter. Like I want one of those big ass fat bears that don't look fast until you're like, oh man, it moves good for its size. But like I just want to cuddle with a big one.
I don't know.
It's I don't know why, but like they just look like fun. The other one would be a raccoon, but you know, I mean that just seemed too easy. Like it's kind of small. I want to think of one that's really more threatening. But yeah, that that would be fun, but I know it would probably kill me.
Right, yeah. Are you familiar with Fat Bear Week?
No, I'm not. What's Fat Bear?
That's a risky Google.
I feel like I should look that up because I might get a couple different things. Yes, I do mean an actual animal bear.
Yeah. Most of the hits when you Google Fat Bear Week do end in the word hub.
Yeah, got
no,
it.
It does not. No, Fat Bear Week is actually done by, it's a thing done by the National Parks Service.
Oh, okay.
From Katmai National Park in Alaska. And it's just a big, it's just a big tournament where they post all the bears that they track that are ready for hibernation that got real fat over the summer. And then they do a tournament for which boy is the bestest.
Okay, you know what? That does sound familiar. I don't know when it takes place, but that I was like, I think one day on Twitter, all of a sudden there was just bears everywhere. That makes sense now. But I starts back with like Pooh Bear, but he was a stuffed animal, but like just a big old grizzly bear.
Yeah, that's the thing, right? Is like we are trained from an early age that bears are huggable, right? Like they are the default stuffed animal.
Well, hell, I live in Chicago where two of our sports teams are a bear and then a cub. So it'd be like, you know, in my mind, that's why I like bears, but I'm like, they seem so cute. And then like, you could see how they could easily maul you in like a matter of like a minute and it would not be painless. So you're like, yeah, okay, maybe just watch from afar. And then you watch them on cocaine and it's like, whoa, you got to really be careful because they get very vicious.
Yeah. So did you... Now that I'm thinking about it, how did you guys end up with two bear-themed names? Is there a lot of bear activity in Illinois?
No, not at all. That's why I have no idea how... it's funny, because our sports teams, you got a bull. Ain't no bulls in Illinois. Blackhawk, that's Indian, so that kind of makes sense, I guess. But then, like, you have the White Sox. I don't know where that came from, really. And then bears and cubs. So it's like, yeah, if anything, it would be like our... Our team should be like squirrels and rats because in Chicago there's plenty of those, but not much bear activity. So yeah, I don't know how they came up with it, but
yeah. Oh gosh. Yeah. Okay. That's a good answer, especially because yeah, we do kind of say, hey, bears do be huggable.
That's a very common saying, I'm pretty sure.
Bears do be huggable. That's the entire premise of the Werner Herzog documentary, Grizzly Band, I'm pretty sure. But yeah, this is a film from 2003 about people who do not try to hug sharks, but end up intimately familiar with sharks. It is a film from 2003, and it is based on the true story of two scuba divers who were accidentally stranded in shark-infested waters after a tour boat had left them. It was directed by Chris Kentis, and it stars Blanchard Ryan and Daniel Travis, and then a bunch of random people. They're the two main people in the film. It has a 5.8 out of 10 on IMDb, a 71% on Rotten Tomatoes, and a 2.7 out of 5 on Letterboxd. What I read in the premise is pretty much it. These people go to the Caribbean. Does it say, or is it Jamaica, right? Or the Bahamas, or somewhere
Bahamas,
tropical.
I think.
It might be Bahamas. And then they end up stranded by their scuba group. And then that's the rest of the movie, is them in the, titular open water, having to fight for their lives and, spoilers, eventually losing them to the elements as well as the sharks. So, Nick, what'd you think about Open Water?
All right, so my first two notes on this film. The first one was, about 10 minutes in, I thought I opened the wrong Open Water, because the way it's shot is very cheaply, like, almost documentary. Well, when the main actress is laying in bed completely naked, and then the guy comes and joins her, it looks like a porno. And it's like, is this the correct Open Water? But then it's followed by a hilarious joke that I actually thought was really funny, was him being like, why don't I get you in the type of mood? And then like a minute after kissing, she's like, yeah, it ain't happening tonight. He goes, oh, bummer. That's not the mood I wanted to get you in. And I audibly laughed out loud. I was like, that's hilarious. That was like a really well-timed bit. And then so the other thing is I've been doing a deep dive into rewatching The Sopranos. So that Italian dude on the boat who doesn't have his scuba mask, and he's just like, hey, yo, guys, come on, let me get a mask here. And then I just wanted a scene where he's in the water and like a shark, like a little shark swims by his foot and he goes, hey, I'm swimming over here. Back up. Like, I'm like, because it felt like he would be a guy who would get whacked in The Sopranos for like one episode. Like, you bring him in, he's the loudmouth, and they kill him. But like, his character just was so much fun for that like 10 minutes he's on screen. But like, the way he's just like, hey, I don't need a partner. It's fine. Everything's like, he was the only one who seemed like an actor acting, you know, like everyone else just, it was very, you know, loose. But I mean, the premise is legitimately terrifying, because like they're in the middle of the ocean with nothing around except saltwater taffy that to eat for 24-hour period. But like I don't know if it's a good movie or a bad movie, because it's just so simple, but like the actual parts of them in the water are scary. Like the fact that like this is like how the Saw movies try to set up situations you would never want to be in. I go, this is 10 times more terrifying, because this could legitimately happen, that you were left in the ocean going, like, you know, if you're with a big group, like, it seemed very scary. And I actually thought the two actors did a pretty good job, all things considered, that they just are in the water the whole time. It didn't, you know, I thought the woman does a great job with her like freaking out all the time, though she also kind of looked like, who's the girl from Knocked Up, Katherine Heigl. She looked like her a little bit, so I don't know why that threw me off. Like like throughout the movie I'd be like, oh, that's her. No, it's not her. Okay. But I thought her like terrified stuff actually worked really well.
It was weird watching this one on the heels of The Reef. I almost think that if we had watched this first, I probably would have liked it more. But
interesting.
This, I think, on the heels of watching The Reef, was just like, what if The Reef was a little worse? Like, it's not a terrible movie, but I was like, I'd rather just watch The Reef. Like, The Reef does everything Open Water does just better.
Yeah, that makes sense. And, like, I think I had misremembered this film because I hadn't seen it for a very, very long time. And in my head, it was, like, found footage, which, so... Okay, it's not just me then, because in my head it was like...
I thought it was a found footage movie as well. Yeah.
Which I think I would have preferred. I just don't know if it would have been possible to... It would have been possible to do it in 2003 because found footage films existed. But, like, now you would be able to kind of explain it like, oh, yeah, of course the divers would have, like, a GoPro clipped onto them or something, or, like, an underwater camera. Like, would they have necessarily had that in 2003? I mean, they had, like... They had an underwater camera, but I'm guessing it was just, like, a stills camera because you see them with it, and then obviously, like, you see it in the end. But I had remembered this film as being, like, filmed by them, and then it was kind of, like... Which it would have been, I think, logistically a bit more challenging because you sort of have to explain, I guess, like, why the camera moves from person to person or, like, whatever, you know, because... If you're filming one person's reaction to something, then obviously you're not seeing the others. But I kind of wish it had gone, like, all in and just been, like, a completely found footage thing. It would make sense because they're on vacation, you know, they're filming each other being cute, and maybe we'd have to get rid of the full frontal nudity scene because a bit weird if you're recording that on your home. I mean, you know what, actually,
no
kink shaming here.
Yeah,
yeah, that's fine, whatever, do what you want.
Honey, but I know, like... you're not in the mood. Let me put the GoPro on, though. Maybe that'll
This will get you in the mood. Click.
Yeah. Click. Wait, honey, could
especially
you move over?
Especially
you gotta get
in 2003, because it was like... You would hear just like click because it would still be a video in the camera.
That's very funny. Yeah, I still really like this film. I think that like the stuff like once it is kind of them in the water, I think is really, really good. And I think actually the low budget quality to it kind of like helps it because The Reef is very glossy. It's very like... I'm gonna say like, well, you know, it is, yeah, it's a well-made film. It looks how a film should look, whereas this does look like someone has recorded it on their video camera, because they probably have. But low budget is fine, and it doesn't feel super low budget. Like, once it is kind of like them in the water, like in, but when it started and it was kind of like, it looked like that, and it wasn't them recording each other being like, oh, we're packing for our holiday, and like, I was like, oh, I've remembered a different film.
Yeah, because
I think,
like, but... I think it does work to its detriment because it looks like a local commercial when the movie starts.
Right.
Like, that's the best way I can, like, that's the vibe I have, is it just looks like, it looks like people calling for HVAC repairs for the majority of the beginning of the movie.
That's very accurate.
Like, you ever been left in the ocean before? Well,
has this ever happened to you?
Has this ever happened to you? You ever have one of those days where a group just totally forgets the two people that were on your crew with you? I will say, the whole time, though, the way it's shot, like a documentary almost, I kept thinking of a funny joke where there's two documentary crews, one with the couple and one that's left on the boat. And as the boat's driving away, the director being like, hey, wait a minute. We just left people in the water. They're like, hey, if this was out in the wild, we wouldn't stop an animal for dying. Gotta leave the people out there. Like, but also, I think the GoPro thing, probably why they didn't do that, Sarah, because I do agree with you. That would be kind of cool to do a found footage, but I think because they're in the water the whole time, it would constantly be bobbing up and down.
Yeah.
It would just would make you nauseous watching a movie. So,
yeah, that's a
not
good
saying your idea was stupid, but I think it just...
But it was
would
stupid,
make you,
yeah.
Stupid. Okay, that would be funny if the whole time it's just her face. Ooh. Okay, now it's, shark, no.
As someone who got nauseous during Hardcore Henry, I absolutely would have gotten nauseous during found footage open water.
I got a little... I get very, very seasick. Like, okay. So this made me, like, a little queasy. Like, there were moments where it is just kind of, like, when you are, like, right there in the water with them and it's sort of, like, underwater, above water, underwater, mm-hmm. above water, which it did in The Reef as well, but it was usually from like a POV shot. Like it was usually like the guy putting on the goggles to then like mm-hmm. look underwater. Whereas this, like, it did just sort of feel that bit kind of like you could tell the person was in the water filming it with them, for like some of it anyway. But yeah, I've got questions about how they managed to miscount so diabolically. Like, because your guy is on the boat, like, ticking... Is it Mask Guy's fault? Is it Sopranos Mask Guy's fault?
It might have been the Goomba's fault. I don't know, because, like... It's okay, I'm half Italian.
He wanted them to sleep with the fishes.
Yeah. He was like, yeah, usually when I'm on a boat, there's cement shoes involved, but so it's fine. He seems so out of place, but I get it, because you're in a mix of people, but just the way he's like, hey, come on, I don't need a botany here. It's fine, guys. Yeah. Come on, let me... The poor guy's like, look, I'm just doing my job. But he, like, double-checks the list, and I'm like, it wasn't like there's 50... It's 20 people on your boat. You would have noticed that the one couple clearly did not come back. Like, you would... And then the fact that they discover it so late, because I had never seen this movie, so I thought the girl was going to get saved at the end. I thought that's how they were setting it up, like... Oh man, we realized we just left this couple out in the ocean. But then also, they kept mentioning how they were drifting. And I'm like, dude, they're probably like hundreds of yards away from where they started. But I thought the scariest part was when it started to get towards night. That would have been like, holy crap. We're now, at least you could see what's going on. But it's like, holy shit, in the middle of the night? No, that would have been...
Yeah, like, I'm not.
God, that made me uneasy.
Yeah, I'm not that scared of the ocean, really. Like, I don't swim in the ocean because I don't really like swimming in general, like, just as an activity. But it's not out of fear. It's just that I don't like being submerged. and so I was like, oh shit, being in the ocean at night is really scary. Like, that is a horse of a different color. Like, I've never, like, considered the fact that I would potentially be in...
I don't know why that phrase made me laugh so much, but now I'm just thinking of like, as they're in the water, and they're just like, oh, wait a minute, no, we're not. We're screwed. We're so screwed. Sorry, again, they play that song in the Sopranos. Sorry, this movie is just Sopranos open water style.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. This is the what do they call it? The backdoor pilot to your Sopranos podcast.
Yes, yes. But Sopranos for... It's called the Bada Bing podcast. Sopranos for a minute.
I gotta tell you, there's a Sopranos pinball machine, and it's one of my favorites, and it's a machine that I am constantly in a battle with, like, two of my other buddies for the top score on, like, every year, because they reset the top scores on all the machines every year. And so I play it a lot, and I'm pretty good at it. But the thing is, it's got call-outs from the actor that plays Big Pussy. And there's a Bing, it's called Bing Multiball, and it's, like, themed around the club. And when you start it, he goes, "Party at the Bing!" And that's all, like, every time I start it, I have to say it with the machine, because it just, like, it just sticks in my head. And then, like, the rest of the day, my brain is just like, "Party at the Bing."
This movie would have been a lot better if it was Tony Soprano and his wife in the ocean floating, and he's just like, "I wish I had some gabagool with me right now."
Yeah. This wouldn't have happened to JFK.
This wouldn't have happened if we just didn't have to go do this, huh? Come on. Like, oh, man. I love that show. But that guy, it was, like, so perfectly timed that I happened to be doing a Sopranos rewatch. Yeah. And then here's just the one random. They're like, we need a caricature of someone to be on this boat. Who could we put? Oh, we'll put the Italian guy who's just like, hey, you mother F, I don't need a partner. Come on. Like, he just seems so out of... It was just so out of place to have this guy on here. But it worked. I thought it was hilarious, because it at least gave a little... I don't know, because everyone felt... It felt very much a... Like you said, Sarah, very low budget. So, like, outside of the two main characters, there's no real characters at all in this movie, except random Bada Bing guy. Like, you know, so...
I think it is partially his fault that, like, the miscount happened, because, like... he wasn't supposed, he didn't go in the water initially, right? So if they're checking off, right, like, how many people have gone in the water, they're saying, like, I mean, the number's still, you know, the math still isn't mathing, as they say, but, like, the, because if they're saying that three people didn't go in, but then, like, two of them do, it still doesn't quite work out how they managed to miss off these people. Like, anyone who has ever, like, I don't know, been on a school trip or worked with kids or anything, you know that what you do is you put those, you put them in pairs and you go around and you physically, like, count them by, like, you know, tapping them on the head sort of thing. Like, that's system. How you make sure everyone's accounted for. Yeah, the buddy yeah. system, exactly. So it's like, yeah, I get it, like, I don't know how they could have been, I don't know how they could have been missed. But then I guess, like, I mean, the characters have, like, a whole kind of argument about that. And, like, what I did like about this film, I think, is, I mean, it looking like it does, you do get that, like, documentary style kind of, like, look to it. But also just, like, the realism of, like, these characters having, like turning on each other. Like, they're obviously, like, I don't know if they're married or they're in a relationship or whatever, but, like, there's a whole bit where they're kind of, like, blaming each other for what's happened. Like, she is saying, you had to go and, like, swim away from the group and we spent too long looking at that bloody eel and all the rest of it. And or he, like, I can't remember how he tries to blame her, that, like, they rushed to go on this trip or something, or they should never have been on this trip or something like that. And a line that I really, really liked, it's kind of darkly funny, but, like, not meant to be, is, like, when the guy is just like, the best part is that we paid to do this. Like, this situation that they're in, this, like, nightmare scenario. When he says that, you're kind of like, oh, dang. Yeah, you've just paid these people to just, like, drop you in the ocean and now that's it. Like,
yeah, I really identified with that line because that is definitely how I think about shit, right? Like, when I was in college, every time I would take a final or if I wasn't doing well in a class, I would be like, hey, you're gambling thousands of dollars on this. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
He also had a lot of, like, she was way too, like, she would always try to seek him for comfort when she was freaking out. And he had such false, like, knowing what the hell was going on, the way he'd always be like, oh, no, someone's coming back. Someone's coming back. Like,
yeah.
this, like, dude, just, there's no way you truly think that. There is nothing around you. But, like, his, like, it's fine. We're good.
Yeah.
But it did feel real. Their fights felt real because the first thing you would do is be like, this is your fault. I didn't even want to do this trip. Or, yeah, like you said, you know, like, that's why I didn't think their performances were bad, personally. Mm-hmm. I mean, I thought they did fine. It's just a movie where, like, it's anticlimactic in the sense of how a normal scary situation movie would feel, but this felt like this could real, like, I obviously it really happened, but, like,
right,
it felt more real that it wasn't like, oh, there's gonna be this, some epic way they get killed by a shark. It's like, no, he gets bitten and just, you know, spoiler alert, bleeds to death overnight.
Yeah.
And, like,
yeah,
you know, like, even his death from the sharks or when they eat his body is not like, they really film it strictly in a certain way, and that's how they do it the whole movie, which I respected.
So did you guys look up the real story at all?
I did, yeah.
It's rough.
No, I didn't.
It is not, like, yeah, it's not good. Obviously. So it's Tom and Eileen Lonergan. They're from Louisiana, and they went on this dive trip in 1998, and they were they went missing, I think, on the 25th, but weren't discovered missing until the 27th, and it was due to some sort of miscount or, like, lack of count at all about who all was on the boat, and their backpacks and stuff were discovered on the boat 2 days later is what happened. And they never recovered their bodies, as far as I know. And so this film was, like, not 100% accurate in that we don't know that sharks attacked them. We don't know how they died. Like, we know they died, obviously, but we don't know how. The prevailing theory is that it was actually, like, delirium from dehydration. So, like, mm-hmm. the dehydration killed them, essentially. But they found, like, their wetsuits and stuff, which implies that they removed their wetsuits at some point, which seems like that, like, that's not something you would do if you had your wits about you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, they also found, like, a diver slate, like, those writing slates that, I don't know if you've seen divers mm-hmm. use those. They found that had, like, mm-hmm. a help us message on there. And I guess at one point there was a theory that they killed themselves. Like, that's how they killed themselves, which, like, why is that? Like, I don't know. It was.
Yeah. How did they kill themselves? That's what I would like.
By stranding themselves, essentially.
Like, geez.
Yeah. They found, I guess, writings that said from, like, Tom that said he wished for a quick and peaceful death. And then they found writings from Eileen that she was going to stick by his side. No matter what happened. And so it was, the media was like, oh, well, did they do this on purpose? And the family was like, what the fuck? What are you talking about?
Yeah, what do you...
It's like, what do you do? But, like, that became the prevailing theory for a while, I guess. But, that's kind of the story, is that they probably just, like, got stranded and died of dehydration, because salt water is really hard on your body, as I discussed with that Indianapolis podcast I listened to in the last episode. So that brings me to the question we've discussed on the last two episodes now. The ethics of this stuff, right? Like, this guy presumes an ending for them. I'm very similar. There are three open water movies.
Yeah.
I don't think they're all directed by the same dude. But I don't know. It was weird. I mean, I guess I'll start. I was more okay with this because I feel like from the beginning he was more like, it says that this is based on true events. And then the director in the Sharksploitation documentary says that, like, it just gave him an idea, right? Like, he says, like, that story inspired me to make this, right? Like, he's not saying, like, this is what happened to these people. He even changed the location, right? It was in Australia. He changed it to the Caribbean. So, I don't know. I think this is the way to do it if you're going to do it. Like, the director was very upfront about, like, no, I heard this story and it gave me this idea for this movie. Right.
Yeah. And it also, I guess it, like, it doesn't... Our problem with the reef and how it was kind of, like, more inspired by a true story rather than based on a true story was that it, like, changed the sequence of events and, like, gave, you know, one person did get rescued in that, but it wasn't the real person who got rescued. Like, in the film, that person dies, and it's like, that making changes like that. I mean, this film obviously, like, fills in the gaps because no one knows what happened to these people, and no one ever will, right? It's just one of those mysterious things that happens, like a disappearance, and obviously people... imagination plus with evidence or whatever, like, try and fill in the gaps of that, but it's like no one is going to know what happens. This film doesn't, I mean, it doesn't change the ending, does it? Like, they both die, so it's just kind of like, it obviously puts in all the shark stuff, but again, like, completely
plausible,
you know, feasible that there were sharks around, and the kind of, like, the mixture of, like, panic, dehydration, delirium just kind of made them go, you know, let's end this sort of thing. Because if you're finding, like, wetsuits that haven't been torn or whatever, then obviously the assumption is that they've taken those off, like you said. And we see it a little bit with the... Is her name Susan? Susan. The character in this, like, she, right at the end, it's kind of hard to see, but she takes off all of her diving equipment and she just kind of, like, goes under. Like, she just is kind of like, I'm never going to get rescued. My partner's dead. I'm done, kind of thing. Right. So it's like, it doesn't change the fates of the characters and the ending. So I have less of a problem with it than I do with The Reef, which I still enjoyed, like, as a film, because it's a good story.
Right.
And I think there is merit in, like, telling stories like this. And, like, yeah, I would have known of this case of these two, like, missing people if it wasn't for, like, this film. And then it's, like, based on a true story, and then you're like, oh, okay, the curious part of my brain goes, okay, let's read this and have a look. So it does make for a good film, and I don't think that it adds I don't think anything is added into this that someone could go, well, hang on, that's...
Right.
That makes me feel uncomfortable, or, like, that's not right. Because they haven't, like, had, like, the woman survived, and, like you said, you know, you kind of think that she is going to. It really looks like it's going that way because the search party begins, and you see them by air and sea kind of, like, going looking for them. You're like, she's going to get saved. Okay, this is fine. Had it done that, I would have much more of a problem with it. But, like, kind of bleak. But the fact that both of these die, people die, I'm like, yeah, that's what happened. Obviously, we don't know exactly the circumstances or exactly how, but the film is at least true to the story in that sense.
Yeah, and I think it's a fine line to tiptoe because of the fact that you could read about a story and then do a movie like this. If you're not saying it's like a, not a biopic, but like an exact, like, hey, I'm going to make their exact story, but I really don't know what happened, so I'm going to do whatever I want.
Yeah. Right.
It's like, well, every movie is like that, essentially. Any war movie, any movie, everything has already happened in human history. It depends on how you want to use it. Like, something, a movie that came out last year, the new Texas Chainsaw movie, uses a school shooting for one of the girls as, like, that was a traumatic thing she used.
That's right.
And I could see people having an issue with it because it's something that hits close to home. But also, I didn't think they did it in a way that was, like, totally untasteful. Like, okay, this is something she experienced, now she's kind of a shut-in and doesn't, like, I get it. So it always depends on how you do it. You know, like what's the movie with the 9/11 thing with Robert Pattinson that everyone's like, that was the dumbest twist. Yeah, so, like, that's a terrible way to use a true event to then get the shock value in a movie, whereas, like, this it's like, look, whether he took their story or not, I didn't have a problem with it. Like you said, you're not taking someone saying, oh yeah, this happened to this couple, but now we're going to completely change who survived or what happened. I think the idea of just, we're stranded somewhere, it'd be the same if you're like, hey, they were out on a dune buggy and out in the Sahara, somewhere in the desert, and then they get lost, and now it's just a movie about them trying to walk somewhere and they eventually die. So it's the same thing. It's like, you know, it's probably happened to people in real life. So I thought the way they handled this. Now, what I thought they were going to do, and I'm glad they didn't, was at the very end of the movie when they're cutting up that dead shark, which was uncomfortable for me to watch. Even though the shark was dead, I just felt bad. I'm like, ugh. Because I know that people capture live sharks, cut their fins off, and throw them back in. So I'm like, ugh, that's not for me. But when they find their camera, I thought it was going to be, they were going to find, like, a part of the person, and I was going to be like, oh, that's that would have been like, yeah. But the fact that they find the camera, I did think was like, okay, that was kind of a cool way, because I'm like, are they going to find something, or are we just watching a dude cut open a dead shark? So I was like, they're going to find something. So I'm glad they didn't go the route of, like, her hand or, like, an eyeball or something, like, where you'd be like, oh, that's... But the fact that they find the camera, I thought was actually... I'm like, okay, because that gives you the, oh, this is how they came up with the something that they found from this couple. So it's definitely, but it is like anything with movies, it's all about how you present the certain topic that you're doing. And they do say, like, hey, based on a true event, but not this is what happened. You know, I think the disclaimers are always important. Like the show Winning Time on HBO is a great example. They say, they're like, look, some of this is true, but we are also fabricating it. So do not take this as gospel. And if you do, that's on you.
Yeah.
Well, that, like, that disclaimer is at the end of, like, every single film, right? Like, this is based on, you know, whatever, like, any similarity to blibbity blue, unintentional.
Right.
And it's like,
good movie.
Because, because, like, you could look at any film, you could look at any film and go, oh yeah, something similar like that happened to me, or I can relate to, like, that thing that happened. And then you get into that, like, incredibly murky territory of someone being like, they made my life into a film, and trying to lay a claim on that, when it's like, how do you prove that? Like, stories exist, like, people consume news and stories, and, like, maybe this was just, you know, not a kind of, like, widely reported news story, but, like, you hear something about that and you're like, oh, like, something about that, like, sticks with you, and you go, yes, that makes an interesting idea for a film, let's kind of, like, embellish that slightly. Because I mean, that's where, like, your ideas for things come from, right? Is like real things that happen, whether it's like your experiences or the experiences of someone else. And, you know, if you're making something that is very kind of like, I'm thinking of Killers of the Flower Moon just because I saw it yesterday, although we're not going to get into talking about that because we will be here all day. But like, Scorsese like actively worked with the like communities to kind of make sure that the story was like being told in a way that was like representative and was like the story that the Osage community like wanted to tell, which is the way it should be done, right? So if you are doing anything that is kind of like based in truth, or, you know, yes, there's going to be things added to it to like make it into a film that people are going to want to go and see, but like, yeah, you don't just kind of like take something and go like, well, I'm just going to do like my version of that or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, there's ways of respectfully telling a story, and I don't think this film is like disrespectfully told. I think it's pretty harrowing, and I think it's pretty bleak. Like, I'd forgotten how bleak the ending of this film was, because I didn't remember that she didn't make it either. And it's also kind of like it happens so quick. Like, he dies overnight, she just kind of like lets his body go, and then she is just kind of like, well, that's it, like, what else have I got to live for, kind of thing. It's over. And at that end, I was just like, dang, like, oh, this is where this film,
I had to rewind it because I thought I missed off. It like,
yeah,
like,
yeah, like, same. I was just like,
I rewound it. Yeah.
Yeah, because you're expecting like to see sharks. Like, in a film like this, you're thinking like that she is also going to get eaten by the sharks as well. And I like that in this film, it is a shark film because there's sharks in it. Mm-hmm. But the sharks are very secondary to like the rest of the dangers in this film. And I think we're probably going to get into talking about like the real shark footage, because like all of this stuff is real.
Yeah,
these people, God bless these actors, they are in the water with these sharks. And there was one particular shot where I like paused it just so I could look at it for a while, where she has like fallen asleep, they've drifted apart from each other, and she is just kind of lying there, and there are sharks just swimming about below her. I was like, those are real sharks. Like, it was a lot. And like, they, I mean, yeah, the actors knew what they were getting themselves in for. And like, we joked about it, I think, before, where like, I think the budget for this film was somewhere between $120,000 and $150,000, which is absolute peanuts. And I was reading, I think the like majority of this budget went on like the crew to kind of like handle the sharks, but like kind of, you know, keep an eye on the sharks, because they needed to lure the sharks to where they wanted them to be. So they were throwing out bait and stuff. So you have like the shark handlers or the shark experts in this film. The majority of the budget went on them.
Like, I'm so playing the Italian guy. I'm getting back on the boat.
Okay. You're like, I haven't got my mask, I'm out of here. But yeah, like, most of the budget money went on like the people who are going to keep these guys safe, and then probably like a nice amount of money to these actors for being like, we're putting you in the water with sharks, guys.
Yeah. And like, I do appreciate that from the story that the brief blurb I read about that on Wikipedia, they were very upfront with people even auditioning for the role.
Yeah.
Of like, hey, if you get this is a non-negotiable thing. We are planning on filming with real sharks. You will be in the water with real sharks. Like, and so even like very upfront at the beginning of the audition process of like, we don't know if you're gonna get this part, you don't know if you're gonna get this part, you haven't read yet, but this is something you like, we are giving you the option to take this out, because this is a crazy endeavor. And yeah, that is a thing. Like, I know this joke was bound to happen here, but like, I, you know, mentioned in the last episode, this is the first movie I made out during, so it's weird the bits that I remember.
Oh yeah, I forgot about this.
It's weird. What got you in the mood to make out? It couldn't have been the naked couple in the
being
first
16.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah,
it could have been Bambi on the screen.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
By the way, Sarah, I thought when you said the sharks were secondary, I thought you were going to say the sharks were sexy. I don't know why. And I was like,
hey.
Well, you found the one term plus shark that I'm not Googling on the pod. Oh, no. Oh no.
I'm hoping that it's
oh no,
relatively innocent.
Are your hits also going to end mostly in the word hub?
Oh no, I don't like that. This is a bad Google.
Yeah,
hang on.
Look, man, I don't feel bad for you.
Yeah.
I no sympathy on this one.
Although there's one in quite a tasteful bikini, which I'll just pop into the chat just for.
No.
Like, it's okay. It's just been drawn on. It's fine. It's not like.
Oh no.
It's okay. Hang on. It's all right. Could have been worse.
Okay.
Why is it? I don't know why it's got cleavage, but you know.
Why else would it be wearing a bikini?
Oh, I'm so sorry. I even brought it up now.
Yeah.
This is all due to the last episode with how.
Yeah. You know, off the rails that shit got. Anyway, yeah. So yeah, this was the one. It gave me a great idea. Someone take this. This is not a pod that I am willing to do, but this is a great fucking premise for a podcast of having people come on and revisit the first movie they made out during. Because, I have been asking that question nonstop. And I gotta tell you guys, no one has had a good answer. Like, there is not a good answer to this. I don't know which one I should say first. Someone told me AI.
Interesting.
Someone told me The Exorcist. Someone told me, this one really made me laugh. Someone told me Patch Adams.
Not Patch Adams.
I like something about that scene where he's with all those poor kids who were dying. They were just like, you know.
But he's got a red nose on.
He's trying to entertain these poor dying kids. Puts you in the mood, apparently. Like, of all the Robin Williams movies, you pick the saddest one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not only is he around terminally ill kids, the woman he loves died. Like, there's so much sad stuff that happens in that movie, and you're like, you know.
Yeah.
Something about those
That's
hospitals, man.
Yeah.
That's the worst one.
Yeah. I was also told a Doctor Who special. Yep, which was the nerdiest answer I got.
Nice.
And arguably the best answer I got. Like, of the answers that I've gotten was just like, wow, that's the only one that's like a little respectable. Even with this one, like, revisiting it, but, like, this is the first time I've seen it since I made out with that person. And so it was very weird. It was very weird, like, it's... This is relevant to my analysis, I promise. But
humble brag, sure, go ahead.
It was just weird, like, the parts that I remembered, right? Like, I remembered the beginning pretty well, and then I remembered, like, obviously them being in the water, because that was all the trailer. I did not, it was completely lost on me that it was real sharks. Like, that had no idea. And then I remembered the end, right? But because I hadn't been paying attention to the movie, like, I was fine with the... I was also, like, a much younger person who was yet less empathetic. And so, like, watching this last night, I was like, this is kind of... Like, this movie's really dark. Because I remembered that they both died.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't spend much time with them, if you know what I mean. Like, I didn't spend much time invested in them.
Sure.
And now, like, rewatching it and, you know, distraction-free... I was like, oh, this is like a really like dark, sad movie. And all that said, I really like one because it is you know, true to the story that these people were never found. That's good, but I just realized that I really like bummers. Like, I don't know, like, it's weird, right? Because if you listen to the most recent episode of Real Perspective, I get upset about Guardians of the Galaxy 3 like being very like emotionally manipulative with the cute animal stuff, where it's just like, no, like, I'm not gonna let you do this, like, because it's so telegraphed and so obvious. But I really like that everyone dies in this movie. Like, I think, once again, because that's what happened, but it's also like, movies don't commit to shit like that anymore. And I don't know. That bothers me. Like, there's so many times where, like, characters die and then they just come back, right? Like, to the point where Nick, to promote the episode I did of your podcast, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang makes a whole bit of it at the end of the movie.
Yeah.
Where, like, you know, you think Val Kilmer dies and then he comes back and they acknowledge it in the narration of, like, yeah, no, I know we're doing the movie thing. Like, let's just bring back everyone. And then, like, all the victims of the killers come back.
Abe Lincoln walks in.
Like, that kind of stuff. So, I don't know. Lately, I've been really, really nitpicky about that of, like, no, a person should have died. Like,
yeah. Yeah, that was, like, one of my many, many problems I had with The Rise of Skywalker, and I've probably said this before because it just pisses me off every time I think about it. Not just that, like, there are so many fake outs with characters in that film, and if you're having this as, like, the last film in the, like, the kind of Skywalker saga, I mean, we all know it's gonna continue and, you know, whatever. But, like, give me some stakes, like, because to the point where, like, when characters actually did die, I was like, nah, I feel nothing. Like, because you've given me so many moments where you're like, oh, you think this person's dead. Oh, no, you think this person's dead. And, like, I think this is, like, a problem with the kind of, like, superhero or, like, comic, like, culture. I don't have problems with all of those films. There's a lot of them I like, there's a lot of them I don't, but they have sort of have this, and this is a thing in the comics, this isn't like a new thing, where it's just like no one is really dead, like, no, you know, because even if the person who, you know, that person who's wearing the suit currently, they have died, someone else picks up that suit and it just rolls on, and you're still getting your Superman stories and you're still getting, like, your whatever, like, insert superhero name here, like, you're still getting all of that because it doesn't matter. Someone else just picks up that mantle and it carries on, or, like, there'll be some way to bring them back. You know, they can time jump, or they can manipulate something, reality, multiverse, like, whatever. I'm just throwing out, throwing out words now. But, like, there'll be a way to kind of,
so,
like,
Marvel
make
these
those
days.
Things. Yeah, it's like, make those things possible, like, you know, because they can, because they're not sort of, like, restrained by those rules. And it's like, I agree with you, MJ, like, I think it's incredibly refreshing to watch. It's gonna sound bad, no one quote me on this. I like it when everyone dies. Sarah and MJ, we like it when people die. No, like, it works for certain kinds of films like this. I think it's really ballsy of this film to, like, end with kind of no one making it, like, in The Reef, granted, there's more people and one person in real life did survive, so I think you kind of, like, killing everyone off in that opens up a different can of worms. But, like, yeah, sometimes it's, if it's what is needed to tell the story, then sure, like, absolutely it should happen, as long as you're not kind of, like, changing events in history or whatever, and, like, you know, having people die when they didn't, or, you know, vice versa. Then I mean, this, why, well, many reasons why we're still banging on about Jaws, because it has the guts to, like, actually do it, like, kill a kid in within, like, 20 minutes of the film, the killer person within 5 minutes of the film starting, like, it's, you know, that we, and one of the main characters, it was supposed to be two of the main characters until they changed it, but like, it's rare now that you kind of see, like, unless it's in, you know, slasher films or whatever, people getting picked off one by one, but, like,
but even slasher films, the problem is, like, the new screens, they don't want, they're always afraid to kill off someone who people like, because they killed Randy in the second one and people hated that.
And
you know, a good example of a movie where you don't expect someone to die, Saving Private Ryan. Tom Hanks was one of the biggest stars in Hollywood when that movie came out. And his death is so good in that movie. And only three guys survive, really, of that whole thing. And it's like, and one of them is the character who a lot of, like, people, I don't know how you guys felt, but, like, Upham is a character who I remember a lot of people didn't like, because they're like, you never showed any spine. And now all of a sudden, like, you're one of the ones who survived. But I get why they did it. But I remember being a kid, my brother hated that, because he's like, he let his friend die and stuff like that. But, like, Tom Hanks dying in that movie is like, oh, you never would have thought he was, you thought for sure Tom Hanks was going to survive. It's like, no, Tom Hanks is too big a star to get killed in a movie. And
right.
like, it's, like you said, it is one thing. Now, as a Guardians fan, I get it. Like, hey, it's, you know, I understand it because I thought people were going to die. I still like the movie a lot. But I do understand, like, it does get frustrating sometimes with anything franchise-wise is when you're like, well, one person could die and it's okay. Right. You don't have to always. Star Wars, it's the same thing of, like, not everyone has to turn good. Some people are just bad. And it's okay for them.
Yeah, that's a good
point. Like, I get why you did it with Darth Vader. He also doesn't turn good at the end. He just saves his son. If Luke Skywalker wasn't his son, he would have still been bad. So I think they took that.
Doesn't not make him Space Hitler.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I go, not every bad guy who kills millions of people then goes, guys, you know what? I gave it a lot of thought. I was kind of a dick.
Right.
Sorry. I'm so sorry that I killed all those people. Could you forgive me? And they're like, hey, it's okay. We all make mistakes. We all blow up planets innocently. So yeah, this movie really was like, we are going to take the cliche. Oh, one of them, especially the woman. Cause in a horror movie genre, usually it's the woman who survives and they're like, nope,
final girl.
You're going to think she might live. Nah, she's dying. Cause she would have died. That's realistically what happened and what would have happened. Mm-hmm. There's no way those boats would have found her in time because they didn't even realize it till the next morning that they're like, oh, damn, we totally miscounted. Shouldn't have put the new guy on the job who's never counted a group of people before, apparently.
He's never counted. This was his first time counting to 20.
He's like, well, he gets up to 20 and he goes, oh, God, I don't know what comes next. Yeah, that's enough people. We're good. Let's get them all on.
I don't know what comes next.
He's just there, like, counting his fingers, like, but I only have 10.
Yeah.
He's like, wait, guys, I only have 10 fingers. He uses fingers, toes, and then he's like, well, I guess that's it.
That's it.
That's everyone.
Yep.
I'm out.
I'm out. I will say one bad one.
Yeah.
What my favorite line was the Italian guys, where he goes, when the dude who agrees to go in the water with him, and he goes, there's a special place in heaven for you, my friend. And I was like, that was good. Other than that, I mean, this is like, I don't know. There's I don't know, like the rest of the movie, it's just them in the water. So
it's pretty slight. Like it's hard to have a lot to
and very
talk
bleak.
About And very bleak. And, like, the bleakness is something that I kind of appreciate. Like, I was thinking about this since you brought it up, Sarah, with, like, Killers of the Flower Moon. Like, inherently a bleak story, obviously. Like, movie ends bleak because story ends bleak, right? Like, it's a true story, and the true story is bleak. But then I was thinking about, like, oh, we don't have a lot of bummers that are hits anymore, right? Like, movies, like, even Open Water was kind of a hit. Like, it made a fair amount of money. And like the last real, like, you know, we used to have movies like Love Story, right, where like one of them dies at the end or whatever, that were hits. The Notebook, I guess, is kind of a bummer, but it's got that like bittersweet thing where like they both die immediately like within minutes of each other. And then the last like truly like big hit movie that's really sad that I could think of was the Bradley Cooper Star Is Born, and that's pushing half a decade now. Like,
no, Star Is Born came out 5 years. I only know this because my son was born the day after we saw it. It was 5 years ago.
That's
so
what
I go, half a decade. Jesus, you know what? I'm like the dude counting people. I can only go for 5. So that was my bad.
I never knew what came after five.
Yeah,
yeah. And oh my God, do I feel old now that that movie is
that's wild.
Half a decade old.
That's
Jesus.
That's
thanks, MJ. Yeah. Now I might as well go out in the ocean, and eat saltwater taffy, and die.
Yeah, we call that Bronte-ing.
You're right, though. That's probably the most bleak, big-time movie. And half of the reason why that movie's so big is because Lady Gaga was in it. Like, it's a good movie, but, like, it wouldn't have been as popular if another actress played it. So,
yeah
I can't think of, like, a big...
Yeah, that's a really good example. The one that I was thinking of, just because I had so many conversations with it with friends who were so annoyed by the ending was La La Land. Like, it ends. I think it ends on like a hopeful note, but it doesn't end with them to like being together. It ends with them like going their separate ways and being with completely different people.
Who are better for them, by the way? Like, they
exactly because they were terrible together.
Clearly should not be in a relationship with each other.
Which is exactly what I told people is because their lives were going in completely different directions and those things conflicted. And yes, we all want the like magical, beautiful, like Hollywood ending where like they end up together, but that's fucking life. It doesn't happen that way, right?
Yeah.
Like it's, and so I had so many conversations with people who were like really livid about that ending. They were like, no, like I was really enjoying it up until the ending and I hated the ending. They should have got together and all the rest of it. And I'm like, I really like that film, but I was like, I found it so refreshing to like watch a film. And obviously it's Giselle's take on like the old like Hollywood musicals where of course the two like handsome leads are together at the end and it's like him going like, you know what, no they don't, like not always, because it's like, yes, it's very much inspired by those things, but it's like, it's got that like nostalgic look to it, but it's set in like the modern day. So
they get their happy ending, but not with each other. And like you said, it's not about ending up together. They both get what they want. It's a bittersweet. You know, Uncut Gems was a movie that I thought had a pretty bleak ending. But again, but it also is a movie like full of just anxiety. So like, I'm just trying to think like, there's really, you don't get a lot of, and now thinking of these movies again, just makes you feel like, holy crap, those are all 5-6 year old. I mean, oh my God. I mean, La La Land's almost a decade old. I could count to, it's almost 8 years old. So it's,
Holy shit.
Thank you for bringing me down. Crazy. Yeah.
That's crazy.
Well, The Nice Guys, same thing when we covered it on my podcast, I'm like, oh my God, it's going to be a decade old in like 2.5 years.
That's jeez, that nuts.
Quick.
Yeah. That's damn. So wild. Like,
we should just do a bleak podcast where we reminisce about movies that you go, oh my God, it's that old. No way.
I'm upset.
I'm so pissed that A Star Is Born's 5 years old, MJ. You remind me.
I was guessing, by the way. Like I couldn't remember exactly what year it came out, but I was like, it feels like 5 years.
I thought it was a pandemic movie for when you first brought it up until I remembered that my son was born the day after we saw it. And I'm like, oh no, you're right. That is fine.
Yeah, it's fine. Also, while we're on the subject, great fucking movie. I really like that movie a lot. It's very, very good. But there's not big budget bummers anymore. Like, bring back the big budget bummer. And like, I'm very encouraged.
Hashtag big budget bummers.
Yeah. I'm very encouraged.
The
that,
BBB.
A $200 million bummer is the third highest opening weekend of Martin Scorsese's career. Like, that made me very happy. Where it was just like, wow, people.
Oh, and really,
this, you know, like,
I mean, any Scorsese film never is like a happy ending. A lot of his movies, and see, now here's a good example, The Departed. Every person except two people of that cat, well, three, because the woman Famara, she lives, but like, you go through that list, you're like, oh, huge name, he gets killed. Mm-hmm. killed. The one who I thought for sure was safe was Martin Sheen. Nope, tossed off a building. So it's like
one of the first people to die, actually. Like of the
of that big
stars.
Cast. Like Martin Scorsese's like, oh, I'll give you Bleak. I'm gonna give you some. And I mean, every one of his movies is a cautionary tale. He's one of the few directors where it's like you're right. Like Killers of the Flower Moon, there ain't no way to my best friend loves that story because he's like, it is, but it's depressing. He goes, it's not a story that has anything happy about it. It is a very messed up, and he's probably the perfect director to do that because none of Scorsese's movies are like, oh yeah, these are about happy people doing happy things. No, they're usually about bad people doing bad things that you root for. Except in this movie, you're like, no, that's. I gotta root for the bad guys in this one.
Yeah, no, fuck these dudes. Yeah, like, yeah.
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 Very much so. And it's like no, go on.
Oh, I was gonna say, like, it's weird because Spielberg kind of does that too, right? Like, Jaws doesn't have, like, a truly happy ending. Like, it does because it's, like, celebratory of, like, hey, the, you know, Brody, God. for like faces his fear and overcomes it, and like there's Amity is safe from the sharks, but like, you know, especially we talked about this, Sarah, doing our thing, like Quint is like a very sympathetic character to us now that we're very attached to, and like it's a bummer, like it's sad, it like there's a bittersweetness to their ending, right? Like, yeah, Hooper and Brody get to go and like, you know, say they're the men who saved Amity, but like came at a cost to them because they forged a friendship with Quint, you know, and like there is still a great personal cost that comes with it for them as well.
Yeah, definitely. And like, yeah, the more I think about it, the more like there are examples of films that do kind of like have the guts to like end that way. But I just like, I've just found myself like very frustrated, I think, with a lot of modern films that I guess like, I don't want to say take the easy way out, but I guess they just kind of like, you know, that the you know, the marquee name or whatever is going to make it through to the end of the film, because of course, you know, unless it's like, you know, that it's, you know, based on a true story and you know that that is a character that dies at the end or whatever, like the majority of the time, like, you know, that person is gonna make it safely through, and it's just kind of like, well, sometimes like maybe it's okay if they don't.
Inverse, I also like when giant named actors show up for the beginning of a movie and then immediately die, like in Scream.
Hell yeah.
Or
all-time best fake out in a movie is the marketing of Drew Barrymore in Scream.
Putting her all
genius.
Over.
I wish more movies would do that, where you're like, don't give it away, but this death is going to surprise people because you're going to think she's one of the stars.
Mm-hmm.
But again, the most classic movie to do that is Psycho.
And what
Scream does is they take the Psycho part of like, oh, you think she's the main character? Oh, but we're going to do this in like 10 minutes, not, you know, 40 minutes. You know?
Well, and you know what's a horror, or what's a non-horror movie that does that? Is The Other Guys.
Yep.
Kills The Rock and Samuel Jackson like 10 minutes into the movie.
One of the funniest deaths in the history of movies.
So funny.
When they're just like, aim for the bushes. And then they're like, there wasn't even a bush around there. And the whole time you're watching it, you're like, oh my God, where are they landing? And then you're like, oh, they're going to land on the concrete. And then, oh no, they're dead.
And the whole time it's like the needle drop is Hero by Foo Fighters.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so good. That movie does a great job of like making the jokes about the cop genre, where they're just like, you guys caused like $300 million in damage for 10 pounds of weed, and they're like, oh yeah, no big deal. Like, we,
yep, like, the last, oh man, good, yeah, that's Adam McKay movie.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
Do you guys have anything else? Is this you? Am I stepping on your thing, Sarah? No. Okay.
Nah, you're fine. Well, I was gonna say there is a Jaws reference in this film, which I'm presuming MJ's face is telling me, no, you didn't spot it.
I watched this movie at 3 in the morning.
Cool. Okay. Well, the characters of 3 in the morning. You crazy
your
cat.
Reaction. Cool. Okay. You don't know.
I'm used to. This is two people.
You can tell you two.
Oh my God.
I
see it.
Time.
Okay. I'll let you tell it, but I see it now.
Yeah. Tell it, Sarah, because I have no idea.
Great. Thanks. Is their full names, the characters. So we know them as Susan and Daniel, but they are Susan Watkins and Daniel Kintner, which is the names of our first two victims in Hugh Jaws, or the surnames of our first two. Because I didn't notice it until it was like when they showed their license, like they found their IDs or something, when they were checking their belongings, and I was just like, oh shit! I was like, paused it so I could immediately like write it down, because I was like, hang on.
No, it was like 4:15 when I like, yeah, no, there's no way.
And this was the second shark movie in a row I watched, because I did the extra work. So yeah. I was going to tell you the awesome Jaws references in Shark Night, but never got around to
that.
So no, but except there's a shark.
That's, yeah, there's a shark, right?
Because they cut the scene where they sing Show Me the Way to Go Home, because they're like, this is 2009, they wouldn't know this song.
That's
good catch, Sarah.
Yeah, good call. Yeah, because I would have never picked the Jaws reference out of this movie. Other than the shark, right? Like, all shark movies get compared to Jaws, and so.
catch that Jaws reference. What? There's a shark.
yeah.
There it is.
Yeah, you know that Jaws reference in Austin Powers. You know that Jaws reference in Thunderball. What's the one where he fights a shark in a swimming pool?
Ace Ventura. He doesn't fight a shark. Gets attacked by one in a pool.
Is it the Diamonds Are Forever? It's one of them. It's one of the later Connerys, I think. Maybe it's Live and Let Die. It's either a late Connery or an early Moore. Sharks show up quite a bit in the Bond franchise, but there's one where he has to fight.
Did you catch the name of the boat they were on?
Was it the Orca spelled
called
backwards?
Jaws?
Called Jaws. No.
No one's gonna catch this little nod to Jaws.
Yeah, it was the A-Rock.
It was actually Jaws for the Revenge, is what they had.
That's the name of the boat.
Oh my gosh!
Welcome to our humble diving vessel, the Jaws for the Revenge. Yeah,
for the Revenge. Down there, we got Jaws 3D. We don't like to go on that one unless you're doing cocaine.
Oh man, Jaws 2 is the only boat in our fleet with electricity.
You're like, my business sucks. My four boats are so specific to just Jaws.
Yeah, welcome to Johnny Four Boats.
He's like, hey, come on, guys. You don't need a mask to go scuba diving on these boats. It'll be fine.
Johnny Four Boats.
I love the idea that this dude was on this diving trip to get ideas of how to run a diving tours business called Johnny Four Boats.
He's like, oh, so you need a scuba mask to go scuba diving? Ah, get out of here. No way.
Times is different.
We just
man.
Came
Times
up with a different. Great movie. Yeah. He's like, Johnny Four Boats, we don't make you have a buddy system. Forget about it. Here's some gabagool.
Some gabagool for the road, for the watery road.
Thank you for choosing Johnny Four Boats. Here's your pack of gabagool and some prosciutto and mozzarella. Let's go. You're good. Again, it's okay. I am half Italian. I can do this. Oh, thank God I watched The Sopranos before this movie.
Yeah,
or that guy had really nothing.
Man.
But
it's really helped. Yeah.
Johnny Four Boats.
Now they need to go back and recredit that guy in IMDb as Johnny Four Boats.
Yeah.
Oh, hey, man. I mean, I can change it on Wikipedia, but it probably won't get approved.
Holy moly. I'm going to be thinking all about right. Johnny Four Boats the rest of the day. But let's hear what you guys had to say. At Wrath of Khan with 3 N's said, relentlessly traumatic. I really hate the guy who bullies them into letting him dive. If he has any decency, he should... Johnny Four Boats himself.
Johnny Four Boats, come on!
If he has any decency, he should allow himself to be eaten by sharks.
Hey, he's got a business to run.
Hey, he's got a code of the ocean.
Yeah. He's got no one else is going to run these four boats. It's got to be him.
Oh. Yeah. at C. Wyatt
my
film.
Boats, they fell off a truck.
A truck headed to Universal Studios. At C. Wyatt Film says, a little rough around the edges, I agree, but the fact that it has real sharks adds some legit suspense. I also agree. Every time those sharks like popped out of the water, it was like really violent to me. Like it was always a jump scare. Mm-hmm. Like the noise it made was always just like, oh Jesus.
The scariest part was their tails flopping through the water all the time. I was like, geez, I never thought a shark tail would be so scary.
Not the last shark
not
tail
the movie.
Watched.
No, this is the scary shark tail.
Yeah. I mean, there are parts of that shark tail that are the scary shark tail, but in a different way. at Hedora 44 says horrible movie.
I don't know if that's like horrible as in like what happens is horrible, or just yeah. like it's horrible. So right. any clarification. But yeah.
Pretty, it's a pretty ambiguous horrible.
Yeah.
Yep. At Bearded Rhino 15 says, it's like Blair Witch Project but with sharks. Good film, but a one and done type thing. Except it's kind of not like Blair Witch Project with sharks. I
kind of agree on the one and done thing though.
Yeah,
like, I like the Blair Shark that Project. That would
yeah.
be fun.
Oh yeah, right. How's that?
Where a guy, where they're in the ocean and the guy's turned his back to the person instead of like him being in the house, they're in like a coral reef, and she's like, "Why are you doing that?" And then boom, no. And then bada boom, she's done. And that's Johnny Four Boats' movie.
Johnny Four Boats, yeah, the Johnny Four Boats Project.
Yeah.
Dumb.
So stupid.
Oh man.
Yeah, well, if you liked any of what this is, you can find more of it at patreon.com/jawsforaminute. You can support us for $3 a month. This month's episode is out. I think I forgot to text you, Sarah, but I don't know if you saw that the Ouija shark episode is out. Oops. And it's also, by the time you guys are hearing this, not this month's episode. This month's upcoming episode is going to be about Mega Shark versus Giant Octopus, which was voted on by our patrons. So if you would like a say in what patron episodes go up, you can join our Patreon. Once again, patreon.com/jawsforaminute. And you will also get a shout out on the show like these fine people: Tim, Eric, Blake, Andrew, Rachel, Katie, Mike, Callum, Cameron, Jack, Chris, and the Uncut Gems podcast. Thank you so much for supporting us and allowing this chaos into your life.
Nick, thank you so much. We always love having you you come on, and I mean, we're not talking about the other thing yet, but there will be something else happening that you are already down to come on for, and I'm sure
not even an option. You guys are just like, you're doing it, and I'm like, thank you.
We didn't even give you a say.
We both texted.
I would have felt
other...
disrespected.
Yeah, exactly.
And you not...
exactly. Yeah, you would have had us whacked.
We just put it on the list, and we're like,
Johnny Four Boats would have took you guys out in the ocean and been like, don't worry, I'll come back.
Yeah.
Exactly. But yeah, anything that you want to plug, Nick, now is your chance.
Yes, if you want to give my podcast a listen, Nick Flix podcast on Twitter is at Nick Flix Pod. I just revamped my logo, which was good. And then I have a new episode dropping tomorrow, which by the time people hear this would have been a while ago, but yeah, I'm getting close to hitting my 30th episode, so every 10 is like a milestone for me. So
nice.
I'm planning on having you guys on again down the road, because you guys are always a blast to talk to. And just follow me on at Nick Flix Podcast.
Nice. I've done that show.
Great. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I've been on twice, I think, and so. I'm always down for coming back. It's always a good time. Yep. So, definitely. Ask people to go and check that out. Before we get into our usual socials rundown, we have a exciting announcement to make, which if you follow us on Twitter, you probably will have seen already. I will caveat this by saying that we are not stopping LJ Fam. We are in fact about to do the absolutely ridiculous thing of me co-hosting my second podcast and MJ co-hosting his third. We are getting ready to party with Marty. We are launching a Martin Scorsese podcast called Let's Party with Marty, where we will be going through every single Scorsese film plus the accompanying films on his Letterboxd list, which he put out recently. So Scorsese joined Letterboxd, and he made a nice old list for us to work our way through. So we'll have a more official episode announcing this for that podcast coming out soon. But yeah, obviously wanted to let you guys know as well that the Let's Podcast family is expanding.
Yep. I also appreciate that Thelma joined us for this announcement.
I had a Thelma and a Martin, so
oh, yeah.
only for the benefit of MJ and Nick on the video yeah. is that my husband just ran behind me, gave a little thumbs up, and then left. And I also have my dog on my lap currently as well. Yeah. So
very
yes,
evil
more...
villain of you, Sarah.
Yeah.
I know, right? It's very sinister, isn't it?
Party for Marty.
Yeah. He can only see, like, her butt as yeah. well, or her tail. But yeah, we will have more details on the podcast coming soon. Do you have anything to add, MJ? We will...
No, yeah. It's a Marty party. That's... we're going to be watching... I think so... Yeah, like I said, we're going to have an episode zero dropping somewhat soon. We haven't necessarily decided when yet, but soon. And that is going... So the one thing I will say here is that that is going to be a separate feed entirely. It will not be in the Jaws Terminate feed. It is going to be its own feed. It's going to have its own branding, its own logo, et cetera, et cetera. However, the episode zero will drop here and there. Just that way, if people come to us from this pod... they can see the announcement here, and then so episode zero of that will be on your Let's Jaws for a Minute feed and on the Let's Party with Marty feed, and then going forward, episode one through the end of the pod is going to be just on the Let's Party with Marty feed. Also, as it stands right now, though we said this at the beginning of Jaws for a Minute as well, this is a 98 episode mini series. We are not planning on making the Marty pod in perpetuity the way we are Jaws for a Minute, but also things can change, so don't hold us to it, but as it stands, that is our plan right now.
Yes. I mean, we'll add some more episodes on for as long as Martin Scorsese is making films. Yes. And we hope that is for correct. Many years yet. But yeah, we're very, very excited for that. We'll have all the details of the socials of that on that episode, but yeah, you can find Jaws for a Minute on Twitter, Instagram, Threads, Blue Sky at Jaws for a Minute. There it's got the link tree where you can find links to our Ko-fi page for a one-off donation, our Patreon page where you can subscribe and get regular bonus episodes and all kinds of other fun stuff. Also links to buy merch. You can also find us individually on Twitter at Sarah Buttery and at MJSmith891. And if you are a better person than we are and not on social media at all, then you can contact us by email, jawsforaminute@gmail.com. I think that is probably everything. So until next time, it's Jaws O'Clock somewhere.